Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.
It is Wednesday, the 8th of May, 2024, and that can only mean one thing. It is, of course, time for Mullinger's Weekly Ramble. This is episode 10 of Mullinger's Weekly Ramble, so thank you all for staying with me on this journey of ramble and nonsense. I can't thank you enough for listening. I can't thank you enough for your lovely messages and posts and questions. We've got a record number of questions to get through this week, which is very exciting. We will get to those very shortly. But let's start, as ever, with some words of positivity and enlightenment. We will start with a quote from Mark Twain. "I've had a lot of worries in my life, most of which never happened." Food for thought there. It reminds me of something else, which the amazing Dr. Meredith Henry, here in the Kennebecasis Valley, a wonderful, incredible counselling therapist, she once said something to me which really stuck with me, so much so I actually stuck it above my desk, and I look at these words every day. And the words are, "You have successfully navigated 100% of everything you have ever had to face and go through," which is really quite an interesting thing when you are dealing with crises or trauma or indeed anything that life throws at you. Just remember that you have successfully navigated 100% of everything you've ever had to face and go through. And we've all been through so many terrible things already in our lives, but we have successfully navigated them. So remember that next time when the universe throws something at you that you think, I can't take this, I can't cope with this, I can't deal with this, you've already successfully navigated things way worse. So remember that. And again, I think she put it better than Mark Twain. There you go. New Brunswick's own Meredith Henry, wiser than Mark Twain. You can quote me on that. Another quote, "Be thankful for closed doors, detours and roadblocks. They protect you from paths and places not meant for you." And that is something I think that, you know, we all every day in life go through numerous disappointments, letdowns, rejections. But almost everything we've ever done in our lives that has been great or wonderful or pleasant or fun or lovely or delightful has stemmed from something else not happening. And certainly, I know it's the same in every business and it's the same in everyone's lives. We're constantly faced with knockbacks and things that make us feel unwanted, upset. And in my business, you know, there's constantly reminders. Again, I mean, social media is constantly reminding, you know, social media exists and thrives on all of us being depressed. So it is designed, even if you say, "I'm not going to look at social, I'm just going to post things and not look," it's constantly reminding you, you know, you might be having a good day. And then it's like, "Hey, look at all these people. They're having way more fun than you. Hey, you think you just got a really exciting gig? Well, guess what? Look at these people. They're way more successful than you. You think you're happy in your life? Well, look at these people. They're way more beautiful and happy than you." It's literally designed to do that. As I mentioned in previous week, Nathan McIntosh has a fantastic review, a fantastic stand-up special about this, about the fact that the least social people in the universe created social media because they were jealous of all of us being outside and having fun while they were stuck inside. So they've created this thing just to make us all depressed. It's true. But the point is that in life, you can't, even if you avoid social media, you can't avoid these disappointments. You can't avoid these knockbacks. But I'll say it again. Be thankful for closed doors, detours and roadblocks. They protect you from paths and places not meant for you. And that's a new way to look at it. One of my closest friends recently, for example, sustained an injury that meant she couldn't go on a trip that she'd been looking forward to for a year with her kids. And they went and she wasn't able to go. But we all just, you know, you just remind yourself, well, this is the universe protecting you from something. And similarly, I certainly know that over the years, when I look back at old diaries from a year ago, two years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, almost everything that was a moment of sheer panic and crisis and depression for me has almost all turned into a positive. Well, look at all the heartbreaks, all of the... I'm embarrassed to say, but like, you know, suicidal diary entries that I wrote as a teenager and a 20-something. And all of those rejections or heartbreaks or lost loves all led to ultimately meeting the woman of my dreams and you know, a woman so amazing that, you know, that we're able to work together every single day after 24 years together and still not only be close and on good terms, but best friends. So yeah, be thankful for closed doors. They are protecting you from paths and places not meant for you. And another quote again, and these are, I will say, my friend Chris Hatt sends these out on a Monday. He has this group of positive thoughts, and you know, some of them you might even think this whole conversation is a little bit twee. And if that's the case, I apologize. And I'll be back to silliness and laughter soon enough. But just one more. It says, always leave people better than you found them. Hug the hurt, befriend the lost, love the lonely. Makes me feel quite emotional, that one, because what a lovely way to look at life. When you think about, there are people who walk through life, well, I mean, there are people who walk through life not caring how people they encounter leave that experience with them, i.e. people that you meet who are rude and mean and horrible. But for most of us, I think we want to go through life leaving people better than we found them. When you start an encounter with someone, when you start chatting with someone, you meet someone, when you offer to help someone, you see someone struggling in the parking lot of Costco with their shopping and you run over to help them, you've left them better than you found them. They were struggling, they were maybe having a bad day, and suddenly by you being nice, it's restored their faith in the universe. So it's just a nice thing to think about when we're encountering people. Okay, I've got so many questions to get through today. And I will say that it's been phenomenal receiving kind messages from you, including a wonderful, wonderful kind lady who wrote, who lives in Florida, but she's from the St. John region, and said that she'd been listening to and enjoying the podcast, which, again, because I just sit here and ramble, I never really know if I mean, the pod started, the amazing people who produce this podcast and put it out there to the world, because I wouldn't know how to do that technically. I sit at my desk or wherever I am in the world, and I record this, I ramble it, and then I send it off, and then they put it out there on the Spotify's and the Audibles and the pod, Apple Podcast, all that. So they tell me, you know, that lots of people are listening, etc. But when you guys reach out and say you're listening, it's really nice. And it happens, I've mentioned this before, it happens a lot at the YMCA. I'm having a good week, if I'm honest. And I know often I come on this and I'm feeling quite down. I had a great weekend in Halifax, a blistering weekend of shows, pretty much back-to-back work. I absolutely filled the weekend with stuff, which I will go through in a minute. And I didn't lose my voice. I didn't get sick, which is always the thing I'm so paranoid about. I took the bus on Thursday, 7-hour bus. Love the bus. Took the bus to Halifax, 7 hours, got lots of work done, got arrived nice and rested because I was able to nap on the bus. It takes 7 hours because obviously there's lots of stops and you change in Moncton. But anyway, lot of coughing on the bus. There was a lot of coughing, which worried me, because as I've mentioned before, I get super paranoid about getting sick, losing my voice. I played Yuck Yucks Halifax this weekend 2 years ago as well, and on that particular weekend lost my voice, which is the most terrifying thing, because you're thinking, can the show go ahead? So you spend the day drinking. I mean, now I spend the day drinking honey and lemon anyway, and mint tea, and I'm protecting my voice. And I'm aware of how ridiculous it is that, you know, I'm basically spend my days doing Adele and Celine Dion style vocal exercises for telling dick jokes. I mean, it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. It feels absurd, but ultimately, I mean, the voice is everything. If we don't have the voice, what can you do? And so when you've lost, and I have done gigs without a voice, like 2 years ago, and you can kind of get through it. I spent the whole day nursing it, and then, but it's not fun, because you're basically up there constantly, not just thinking about the next joke and the next line and blah 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 blah. You're constantly thinking, okay, I need to raise my voice on the next. Have I got enough? You know, is there enough oil in the tank to raise my voice to that. So you're constantly thinking about vocal. I mean, there's enough to think about on stage without having to add that to the list. So a lot of coughing on the bus, which made me worried. And I knew I had a packed down Friday. I had had to be at Global News at 6 a.m. for an interview with the lovely Paul Brothers. I was doing that first thing, which was great fun. He's obviously just an amazing guy, absolute joy. Love seeing Paul at Global. And then at 11, I was doing the podcast Matter of Facts, which is a fantastic podcast that you should check out, hosted by James Collins and Alec Cranston. One Canadian, one Brit. Great thing. It's about Halifax. They've had so many good hosts on there. Did that actually at the Podstarter studio. So it was lovely to see Reese and John, who again produced this show. And also were the brains behind Mullinger Meets Canadians, my other podcast as well. So did that. And then I had 4:30, I was at CTV for an interview with the lovely Maria. And that was super fun. And both those TV interviews were super fun. Although obviously, you know, me being me, I beat myself up about it. They're both live, completely live. So I always leave those things thinking, oh, I wasn't funny enough. I should have been funnier. Why did I say that? Why did I waffle here? Always beat myself up about that. But what can you do? And both those interviews, they were very kind enough to show the footage of the big Imperial Theatre show last week with the St. John Youth Orchestra, the big reveal. Tyler Warren Ellis's beautiful footage of that was shown. And that footage, he's editing it right now. And this week we will be releasing that on social media. So watch out. Any moment now, you'll be seeing all the footage of that glorious moment with the St. John Youth Orchestra. And then I had a Friday night show at Yuck Yucks, which was great. The amazing Clifton Cremo opening for me, a truly brilliant comic. He's only been going 5 years, but I mean, this guy was like the finished article after about a year. And I actually interviewed him on Mullinger Meets Canadians, my old podcast, as a recommendation it was a recommendation by the amazing Sarah McClellan, who used to work at Podstarter. She had a great podcast called Intoxicated. And she opened for me at Yuck Yucks 2 years ago. Great comedian, absolutely wonderful human being, very, very funny comedian. And she'd recommended Clifton. So I interviewed him a couple of years ago on the podcast. And again, it was just this, you know, the Indigenous comedian from Cape Breton who's just taking the comedy scene by storm, like just arrived at the gate as the finished product. Like this guy was just brilliant from the get-go. And sure enough, Friday night, absolutely stormed it. I had a nice gig. I would say I 2 years ago, even without a voice, those two shows were two of the best. And it could have just been because we were coming out of COVID, but they felt like two of my best shows. Like they stand out in my mind as like blistering shows. This time around, I felt like the audience was slightly harder work, and maybe I misread the room in that there was a lot of people possibly not there necessarily for me, but they were just there for Yuck Yucks. So maybe I needed to do a bit more explaining. Like if I start a show in Vancouver, I kind of come out and go, hi, I'm an English comedian. I left England. Like I kind of explain the premise of what my act is in a comedic way, obviously not in a, but this time I kind of burst out the gate improvising and riffing with the crowd. And it took a bit of time to get them warmed up, but warmed up they got. And I think I ended up doing about an hour and 10 minutes, hour and 15 minutes. And it ended with my first ever standing ovation in a Yuck Yucks Halifax. Yuck Yucks Halifax has changed location. It used to be at the Westin Hotel. Now it is at the basement of the, what's it called? The shoe shop? I'll look it up in a sec. But basically on Argyle Street, you know, where all those amazing bars and restaurants are, right down from the Carlton, next to Antojo, near Dirty Nelly's, opposite the convention center, opposite Moxie's. Oh, the shoe, it's called something. You can Google it. But I must have done upwards of 30 shows at Yuck Yucks Halifax in the various locations over the last decade plus, and never got even half a standing ovation. And actually Daniel Allen, who by the way is a brilliant comedian and a saintly human being who manages and runs Yuck Yucks Halifax, He did point out that he said they never get standing ovations at the club. He didn't recall one. Maybe they felt, anyway. So point being, I didn't feel like I started off well, but then by the end, it was like, wow, I can't believe this has happened. It was like, you know, just meant a lot is what I'm saying. I went back to the hotel, beautiful Sutton Place Hotel, which I love. Love all the people there. Eli is just an absolute saint. Danan, lovely Olivia, just everyone at the Sutton Place Hotel, Halifax, favourite hotel in the world. Said it before, I'll say it again. And I got back and I was buzzing from the gig. Couldn't sleep, so I watched Love Lies Bleeding, the Kristen Stewart movie. That is absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's completely bonkers, down and dirty, sleazy crime epic, but also a surprisingly beautiful love story. So it's not for everyone. Sure enough, like the Guardian newspaper, which, you know, as I've mentioned before, is my kind of UK Bible, has, you know, three different critics have given it. Peter Bradshaw, their main critic, gave it 5 stars. Another critic gave it 4 stars. Another critic gave it 2 stars. That is to say, it is divisive. So that was my Friday night. Again, you know, clean living straight after the gig, back to the room, munching vitamin C's, drinking lemon teas. Yeah, a lot has changed. 5-10 years ago, I used to be able to go out, you know, like drinking, and again, not proud to admit this, but, you know, occasionally smoking cigarettes after a show and be able to drink after the night, wake up the next day, right as rain, and do a show. That not anymore. I mean, as you know, I mean, over five years ago, I quit having anything to drink on a show day. And then a few years ago, I got super strict. Now it's like I won't drink anything the night before. Sometimes the week of, I mean, like before a big show like the Imperial, it's, you know, I'll do kind of 7 days of no drinking beforehand. And, you know, every day is, you know, green teas and lemon and honey and vocal exercises. Just, you know, you guys are kind enough to come out. I'm going to make darn sure that my voice is perfect. So that was, and then Saturday got up. I suppose it's Saturday morning. I went to, I think I had breakfast at Harvest, which is near Sutton Place. Gorgeous. Nice smoothies, nice gluten-free toast, avocado toast with a poached egg. And then I came back for a meeting with a very talented writer, director, filmmaker, former actor, actually. He actually acted in a Hallmark movie once. But Tyler Burns is his name. And he has written a fantastic sitcom about comedians, about young, new comedians. And there's a character in it that is an evil British comedian who comes over to, well, I'm not going to give it away. But we had a meeting about this, and he's written this for SwearNet, which is, of course, the Trailer Park Boys streaming service. And I think I'm allowed to say that I got the part. So that was a very nice start to Saturday. And I think I'm also allowed to say this, it's filming in Halifax next month. So I'm going to be in Halifax next month filming a sitcom for the Trailer Park Boys streaming service. And I won't say anything else, just in case I'm not supposed to be saying this. Straight after that, I went to do another podcast, 2 p.m. at, it's called Afternoon Pint. And Afternoon Pint with Mike Tobin. It's a great podcast. You should check it out. It's where you sit and have an afternoon pint with someone and they chat. And other people I know and love have been on it, including Reese Waters, a lovely Reese from Podstarter. Obviously, being a show day, I had a non-alcoholic beer, which, again, they're so delicious now. I honestly, a non-alcoholic beer is so good now. When you think it was absolute rat poison piss for decades, if I went to a party, you could serve me non-alcoholic beer as alcoholic beer, and I wouldn't know the difference. And I would even go so far. I was at a restaurant when I was in Toronto a few weeks ago, went to a sushi restaurant. It was a Monday night and they had some amazing deal on. And it was a vegan restaurant. That's right. It was vegan sushi. So I thought, this is going to be disgusting. And I knew it wasn't, because my wife had eaten there a few weeks before and she said it was great. So I went there to this, and if you want to know the name of it, message me and we can look it up. I'll send you the details, so I can't remember the name. But anyway, so I'm sat there eating vegan sushi, and I think I had a show the next day. So again, not drinking, but fancied a Sauvignon Blanc and saw they had non-alcoholic Sauvignon Blanc on the menu. So I had that. And again, I mean, knowing it was non-alcoholic, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I can tell. But if you serve that to me, I don't know if I would be able to differentiate that it was non-alcoholic. I would just think it was homemade wine from Sussex. So, there you go. Homemade wine and non-alcoholic wine, same thing. Except, of course, homemade wine, potent. My brother once gave me homemade, hooch, hooch. Is that what it's called? Where it's, where people make, I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, it's liquor, hard liquor, homemade, and from BC. And I started hallucinating, full blown, like an LSD hallucination. So stay away from the hooch, the homebrew. And then, well, of course, that night we had the second show, Saturday night show, which was lovely. Lots of people in the room that I knew. John Tattrey was there, the editor of Atlantic Books Today, which incidentally their new issue is out. Check it out. It's in Indigo. I think you can order it online. But it's in all bookstores. Great magazine. A magazine devoted to Atlantic Canadian literature. Stephen Cook, formerly of the Chronicle Herald, a world-class genius, author of some of my favourite ever articles about myself and indeed about anyone else. In fact, I'm looking right now at a big feature interview he did with me for the Chronicle Herald. When my book came out and I was doing a big event at the Halifax Central Library, and absolute legend Stephen Cook, he was there with his, both John and Stephen were there with their lovely wives. There was other people there, who else was there? Oh, Mary Barlow, my dear friend, she used to work at Chapters in Moncton. She also was a literary reviewer for Edit for many years. She now is a senior at Audi in Halifax. Mary was there with a big group of friends, including her wonderful boyfriend, Jamie, and a great British friend of hers, who, loveliest man alive. He, especially for a Brit, I think he works with her at Audi, and he said something really nice to me after the show, which was accompanied by a hug, and it, made me cry. And my other new friend, Michelle, who works for the Dairy Farmers of Canada, and we are working on a very exciting project, which I will tell you more about another time. So that was the second show. Again, that was harder work, actually, even the Friday night. Not that you expect a standing ovation every night, but, you know, didn't get one Saturday night. So, you know, it's crazy. You're not expecting one, and you get one, and then you get disappointed if you don't get one. Pathetic. And I went back and watched the Cat Williams stand-up special, Woke Folk, which was part of the Netflix Is a Joke comedy festival, which, again, it was streamed live. Cat Williams' special, not for the faint-hearted, not for the easily offended. Didn't like how it started. Started off, I thought there was aspects of bullying, for want of a better phrase. And then to have to say about halfway through, I kind of got into it. And by the end, I have to say, I'm a Cat Williams fan now, and he's going to watch the rest of his stuff. It was smart stuff. So that was my weekend. And then that night after the show, you had a couple of non-alcoholic beers with Sarah McClellan and Clifton Crimmo and Clifton's friend Mike they'd brought with him, and we put the world to rights. We talked about life and comedy, and we talked about bad gigs and good gigs. Clifton told me the funniest story I've heard about a bad corporate gig in a very, very long time, and I will let him, I think it's going to probably become a bit because it was absolutely brilliant. And then I caught up with lovely Elise Hand, who used to work at Global News. She did my very first ever kind of TV interview on Atlantic Canadian News Channel, I think, back in February 2020, right before the world ended. And we went to Dirty Nelly's, which I had never been to before. Stood in line and everything. I couldn't believe it was weird being in a place where there's people stand in line to get into places, and then you get into the place and it's busy and buzzy, and you get, unfortunately in St. John that doesn't happen. So We go in, and it was interesting because I'm always lamenting the lack of authentic British pubs. And yet this Dirty Ladies, as I understand it, as Elise told me, it's an Irish pub that was basically dismantled in Ireland and transported piece by piece and replicated identically. And sure enough, in there it's spot on. They got it right. It's an Irish pub through and through. There was a band playing, or two guys, and they were playing Ed Sheeran. Absolutely spot on, magnificently. I couldn't believe it. And again, Ed Sheeran, you know, obviously, like most people, I like what Ed Sheeran does. But, you know, geezer and a guitar, you've got to stand in an arena of 80,000 people. Or you can stand in Dirty Nelly's and be a few feet away from two guys that sound exactly the same as him. And you can watch all these couples like hugging and dancing. And yeah, it was nice. So anyway, thank you to Francoise Weber at Yuck Yucks Halifax for everything. A gorgeous weekend. And I took the bus back on Sunday, another 7 hours on the bus, got lots of writing done, and got home and watched the roast of Tom Brady, which, oh my goodness, when I said to my wife, like, oh, we planned to watch Unfrosted, the Seinfeld movie, and then as a family, but then River was off to a sleepover with his friend Weston. So instead, we said, okay, well, River said, don't watch Unfrosted without me. So we said, okay, we'll watch the roast of Tom Brady. And Pam said, how long is that? I said, 3 hours. And she was, we're not watching all of that then, obviously. 3 hours, pretty ridiculous. And I agreed with her. And then we started it. And I mean, let's just say they called it the greatest roast of all time, because obviously Tom Brady is apparently the GOAT, if you know anything about American football. And it was the greatest roast I've ever seen. And given it's live, which means, they can obviously show stuff that Comedy Central would have presumably edited out back in the day. But also, given it's live, it could have dragged. It didn't drag at all. 3 hours. We laughed nonstop for 3 hours. It was everything a roast should be. Absolutely savage. Every single comedian absolutely ripped the roof off, nailed it, stormed it. Nikki Glaser, I mean, wins the award for just the most savage, most tight. In the first minute, what is there, like 8 gags? And clearly, obviously, with a roast, I mean, as a comedian, you know it's a career maker. Amy Schumer's career was made by a roast. Is it fair to say Greg Giraldo was also one of my favourite comedians of all time? I actually met him about a year before he passed in Montreal. You know, comedians know that the roast is a career maker, especially when it's live and one has been globally streamed by Netflix. So they all obviously went all out, like, you know, hiring the best writers. Nikki Glaser unquestionably just ripped it. There was obviously some embarrassing moments, like, you know, Ben Affleck coming out and obviously didn't really understand the assignment, which was be funny and roast people there. Instead, he came out shouting at, you know, spotty teenagers in their mum's basements who write things, mean things online, which, you know, again, you know, I'm not going to defend meanness, but, you know, multimillionaire married to Jennifer Lopez, one of those powerful men in Hollywood, Oscars and all awards on the shelf. Maybe there's other people you can go after, Ben, than kids. And just stop reading it, Ben. Stop searching your own name on Twitter, and then you don't have to see it. But he's, you know, he made out like he was, you know, defending Tom Brady, but you could tell he was channeling his own anger at the crap that people say about him. And again, I mean, I completely agree. You know, there's nothing helpful about people sitting around writing crap about people, but at the same time, you know, Ben, this isn't the time or the place. And, you know, it's world's smallest violin time. And unfortunately, and it's sad because obviously he's an addict, but whoever offered him or indeed gave him or thought it was a good idea for him to take cocaine before walking out on stage. I mean, it was almost like he was, and again, I mean, the facelift he's had. I mean, Tom Brady's facelift, you know, looks right. Ben Affleck. I mean, I've never understood facelifts. I'm not criticizing anyone out there that has had them. But generally, it's like Ben Affleck, very good looking person, and had a wonderful face that was aging gracefully, but has now had a facelift or so much Botox or both that the face doesn't move, and it's now all smooth and weird, and it looks like a plastic mask. It looks like when someone gets beheaded in a movie and they create a plastic version of that head looks like that, or like a Mission Impossible pull off the face rubber mask. That's what his face looks like. So when you've done all that to yourself, don't then fall off the wagon and, I mean, the way that he looked, all sweaty and jaw going left and right. It was like someone who's like accidentally toking cocaine in a comedy movie. It was like comedically. But all of that said, very sad that someone who has addiction issues fell off the wagon, and clearly fell off it badly, because it's one thing to fall off the wagon and, you know, being a hotel room or in his mansion or whatever else, but the fact that he's fallen off the wagon so badly that he didn't think, maybe I shouldn't walk out on stage at one of the most watched, globally streamed thing in a room full of 20,000 people and go off on one high, is actually very sad. So best luck, Ben. Hope you get better soon. And I hope people look out for him. Given he wasn't billed to be there, I mean, he actually was weirdly on the credits at the beginning, which kind of ruined the surprise, but it was supposed to be a surprise that he was there. Someone should have not let him go out. Anyway, what was fascinating was, I mean, so good about the roast was I didn't know anything about American football. I didn't know anything about the grudges, about the coach and Brady and the other players. But the jokes were so good, so well written. Who knew that American footballers could go out and perform? Obviously, they didn't write that material. Professional comedians like Jeff Ross wrote those jokes for them. But they all delivered them with such passion and heart and aplomb. And again, through all the savagery, there was genuine warmth and love in the room and fondness, and the way that people that have obviously had grudges, which, you know, again, we were kind of equating it to British sports. It was like, oh, clearly that coach has a grudge with Brady the way that like Alex Ferguson did with David Beckham. And all we were kind of understanding it. And now I've become obsessed with reading and learning it all. Now I want to watch that TV show, The Dynasty. I actually started watching it last night to understand all the stuff about the Patriots. Obviously, Bill Burr is always talking about the Patriots. So it's obviously a very interesting thing. Tom Brady cheating. Again, that's a weird thing that he actually cheated, like deflated balls and got away with it and then admitted it on the roast. I mean, there was so many amazing, savage, brilliant, hilarious moments. If you haven't watched it and you don't mind highly offensive comedy, go for it. Jeff Ross was great. Tony from Kill Tony did a phenomenal job. He is one of the best roasters in the business, and he absolutely he came up and Dana White from UFC was also quite funny, but yes, Tony Hinchcliffe, he absolutely, you know, demolished the thing. I mean, ripped the roof off. But there was a weird moment when he got on stage and he roasted every comic brilliantly, savagely, hilariously, got to Bert Kreischer, and then obviously on the end was Tom Segura, and he completely blanked Tom Segura, didn't roast him, which in some ways was basically the most savage barb of the night. The most vicious roast was not roasting him. And Tom Segura looked absolutely devastated. I have not seen anyone look quite so sad at a roast since Amy Schumer made that joke about Ryan Dunn at the roast of Steve-O. Ryan Dunn had, of course, passed, and Steve-O was his best friend. And Amy Schumer made a savage, but arguably funny joke, and understandably Steve-O looked devastated, but not as devastated as Tom Segura looked when Tony Hinchcliffe, you know, just essentially dissed him by not roasting him, because roasting is love. Yeah, anyway, it was brilliant. So what's the roast of Kevin Hart? I thought did a great job hosting, and actually did a great job improvising. Kevin Hart, not known, you don't often see him do riff, and yet I thought it was magnificent. And he actually was at his best when he came on in between people and did just improvise. So okay, we've got loads of questions. Bloody hell, 30 minutes in. Sorry, I've been banging on. Well, Manager's Weekly Ramble, what can I tell you? That's what it says in the tin. Janice McAdam has asked, morning, James. You may have already asked this, but I'm curious where you met Tyler Warren Ellis. I think he does an amazing job. I agree, Janice. She's got another question, but I'll go. I met Tyler Warren Ellis in the church hall at St. Paul's on the Rosse Commons, a beautiful church. It was a few weeks before my first Harbour Station show in April 2016. Tiffany Mackay French was doing something related to running for councillor. Maybe she was already councillor. Maybe she was looking for re-election, but we were there to support. And Tyler came up to me as a young 20-something and said, hi, I'm friends with Travis Boyce, who's a great, great local comedian. I went to school with Travis. I would love to photograph your Harbour Station show. I said, please do. We've already got about 10 photographers booked who are coming to shoot it. And it's been, obviously, Hemmingshouse are capturing it for a CBC documentary, City on Fire, but you're welcome to come and shoot. Tyler came to shoot. He got the shot of the night and it made the front page of the Telegraph Journal. And I agreed, Tyler, and Tyler and I have worked together for 10 years. 8 years, I guess, since then. And on thousands, literally thousands of jobs. Well, no, I say that literally hundreds, definitely hundreds of jobs. And we've never had, we've never raised our voices to each other. So that's the best. And he's just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, just world class. Great Tyler Boyle story. When he filmed my Almost Canadian stand-up special, which was the one I did 2 years later. So in 2016, he photographs Harbour Station. Within 2 years, he gets promoted to basically directing and overseeing the entire crew for my second stand-up special at Harbour Station, which was now for Amazon Prime. Once it was edited, I sent it to two people at the top of the industry, Brent Chies at Just for Laughs, and my friend Tom Keeney, who was Seinfeld's publicist. And I said, guys, can you watch this? I want critiques. And I don't want, it's good for you, James. It's good for a 20-something filmmaker in St. John. It's good for, you know, whatever. I want you to critique it the way you would critique one of your clients. I mean, Tom Keeney also looked after Letterman, for instance. And obviously Brent Chies was at Just for Laughs for 30 years. So he's worked with every single god comedian under the sun. Anyway, they came back with their feedback and was all positive. A couple of nicks and tucks here and there, but basically all positive. And they also had just glowing words to say about Tyler, including, in fact, this story might be in my book, actually, Janice. So check out Brit Happens on Audible. Plug, plug, plug. There's also a documentary online called The Making of Almost Canadian, and the story's in there. But basically they came back and they were just in awe of Tyler's work, not least because the way that he captured stage and audience, often in one sweeping tracking shot. They said normally when someone shoots a stand-up special, a director, a cameraman, a filmmaker, a cinematographer, they haven't seen the show a million times. Tyler came on the road with me for weeks and weeks and weeks and basically witnessed the show. So he knew every beat and every inch of every joke. So he knew exactly when to film where and when to sweep. And anyway, I agree. Tyler's amazing, Janice. Are you generally a night owl or an early bird or both and don't get much sleep? I am both. For example, after shows, I can't get to sleep and I often feel very creative at midnight, 1 a.m, and I can sit and write chapters, jokes, stories, diary, lists. I also get up very early every morning. My wife gets up at like 5 a.m. to go for a walk with her friend Steph or to go to the gym. My kids are now always bugging me to be, they always like to be woken up early. My son Hunter goes to the gym very early. So he often obviously wants to be up at like 5:30. River obviously often wants to be woken up early so he can bike to school with his friends. So I'm both, which is why, for example, I like traveling by bus because I can't drive for 4 hours without needing a nap. So the great thing about taking the bus to and from Halifax is, of course, I got there and got home not tired because I've had a couple of hours sleep during the day. So, I can stay up late, but then that said, I can also go to sleep when I want to. I'm quite lucky that for someone with ADHD and a very overactive brain, I can go to sleep quite easily at night, generally because I'm so worn out, but also because we get up at the crack of dawn. And I think, yeah, that's good advice for, I guess, anyone who struggles with getting to sleep at night. Get up ridiculously early. So often, for example, if Pam gets up early to go to the gym, I'll get up then and try and write a chapter for the book. Oh, and this fits neatly into the next question, which is from Judy Petition, my beloved sister-in-law. She has asked, how do you relax and recharge between all the business? Similarly, I read a lot of books, including a book I just finished today, which Judy actually gave me for Christmas called Life Sentence by Amy Bell. Amy Bell. It's published by Nimbus, one of the great Atlantic Canadian book publishers. The tagline for the book is "How My Father Defended Two Murderers and Lost Himself." It is a devastating story about a truly awful part of New Brunswick history in which two heroic police officers were murdered by two killers. And Amy's father, Ed Bell, stepped up to defend the killers. Of course, everyone is entitled to a defense. That's what Ed Bell believed. I believe Amy was one when this crime occurred. Anyway, it essentially destroyed her father's life, taking on this case. And anyway, Judy went to St. John High with Amy Bell. And she got me this book for Christmas, and I just finished it this morning at the Y. So I guess one of the ways I react is, like, I'm swimming is my big thing that I love. And shout out to all the lovely ladies that I meet at the Y every morning. They're all there, often getting there early for their exercise classes. Mostly seniors, I would say, mostly seniors. Apart from Monique, my dear friend Monique, who is my age and we always have a lovely chat. I mean, my number one favorite thing, head clearer, is going to the YMCA for a swim in the morning, and then I go upstairs for what can charitably be described as light exercise, in that I kind of get on a machine like a treadmill or a ski machine, and I stand there and read a book, like the beautiful book that you bought me, Judy. So Life Sentence, I highly recommend it. Absolutely devastating. I have a couple of books on the go right now. I'm actually reading Senior Management by Martha Vowles, who she won Best Nonfiction Book at the New Brunswick Book Awards year before last. And it's about caring for her parents as seniors. And it's absolutely beautiful and hilarious. It's published by Nevermore Press. Highly recommend that. And at the weekend, I finished Matthew Perry's book, which my darling friend Natalie Hatt gave me. I think she felt she didn't want to read it after Matthew Perry had passed because it would be too sad. And she asked me to read it for her. And I did. I just finished it. Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. It is absolutely devastating. I mean, you know, lots of us obviously know people with drinking problems or drug problems. And over the years, we've all, you know, question their own consumption, and we go, oh, am I drinking too much? Am I drinking not enough? we all go through all these different things. And reading a memoir by someone who, I mean, just awful, absolutely. Like, I mean, he didn't seem like he's ever enjoyed life. Like, and also, I mean, possibly one of the most honest memoirs ever written, in that he really does not come across well in it at all, and he doesn't even try and kind of come up with justification for his deplorable thoughts and actions and the way he treats people and his praying to God, begging for fame and then getting it. And it's tragic. It's truly one of the most tragic memoirs, and just never. And it's not like, he describes working on the whole nine yards with Bruce Willis, who he describes in it as a big partier, and how they kind of drink all night together, and the difference between Bruce, who is a partier, and Matthew Perry, who is an addict through and through, who just really, it's not like, you know, some people kind of get swept up in the moment and they're partying too much and it gets out of hand and they need to stop. Matthew Perry seemingly has never enjoyed anything. God bless and rest in peace, Matthew Perry. And it's tragic. And I think one of the final lines of the book, which again, when you read it, also knowing what happened, I mean, one of the final line of the acknowledgements is an acknowledgement to Jamie, who's someone he loved. And Jamie, sweet, magical Jamie, whom I will miss and think about until the day I die. It's very sad. Sorry, I ramble. How do I relax and recharge? As you know, Judy, I love what I do. So also, it's not it never feels like work. So for example, when I've been gigging back to back, when I come back, like right now we're sending the new issue of the magazine to print. And by the way, Judy, thank you very much for that lovely article that you've written about the PGA Golf Tour coming to New Brunswick. Does everyone know about that? Absolutely amazing. All these amazing PGA Golf Tours coming in Mactawhack Golf Course. If you don't know about it, buy the next issue of the Maritime Edit. Or indeed, I should point this out, Maritime Edit magazine, which is now on its 29th, we're working on the 29th issue. My wife and I started it 8 years ago. Amazing team, contributors, including Judy and multiple other contributors. The magazine business is obviously hard. Starting a print magazine in New Brunswick in 2017. 8 years later, harder than ever. I don't know if anyone knows this. Paper costs have quadrupled in the last 5 years. Quadrupled. So, to put it depressingly real, the price that we sell the magazine to stores for is basically what it costs to print it. And that doesn't even include the costs to commission artists and writers and photographers. And we do pay everyone, unlike a lot of magazines. And we also don't receive we don't receive any provincial funding or support. So it's all advertising. So we do get help, but it's a struggle. And if you would like to support the Maritime Edit magazine, please do go online and subscribe, maritimeedit.com. So it's only like $45 for a year. Four magazines that tell you everything you need to know that's happening in Atlantic Canada, or as much as we can fit in there, produced with love and passion, and just, we just want to produce a beautiful, great thing and continue to do it. So to relate back to this question, when I've been on the road and doing a lot of stand-up and a lot of TV and a lot of blah, 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 when I come home, working on the magazine feels like fun and relaxing and a hobby. So right now I'm writing a feature on the best things to do this summer in Atlantic Canada. And there's so many exciting things in the next issue. We have the definitive guide to independent Atlantic Canadian bookstores. Every single Atlantic Canadian bookstore on the East Coast is mentioned, listed. We've got features. We've got so many exciting things. But the new issue is still on newsstands now. I've got 10 minutes left. I've got 20 more questions, so I'm going to go fast. Wes Harris has kindly asked, have you ever regretted staying here in New Brunswick instead of moving to Montreal, Toronto? No, is the answer, Wes. Occasionally, I guess you go through times when you don't get opportunities and things, and you think, oh, is it because I'm here? But, well, it is. And so there are jobs that I've lost by not being there. But no, I wouldn't trade it in for anything. I would much rather do what I do here than anywhere else. And there's 1,000,000,000 benefits to being here that I wouldn't have elsewhere. Jason Daigle, are there other places besides Yuk Yuks in St. John that you have been where places used to be? Yep. Well, Popeye's Chicken. If you want directions to Popeye's Chicken in St. John, there's only one thing to say, and that is where the 3 Mile used to be. Obviously, when people used to ask where H&M is, I would say it's where Target used to be, but now H&M's gone too, so whatever goes there is going to be, whoa, where's whatever this is? Oh, it's where H&M used to be. Where's that? It's where Target used to be. Lindsay Manza, lovely Lindsay from Long Bay. Oh, Long Bay, incidentally, Long Bay Brewery is now open on Mondays until 6 p.m. The terrace garden is open. Pam and I went there last night. They have, in addition to the beautiful beers they make, they also have wines and spirits. Pam can't drink beer because she's celiac, allergic to gluten. Although I will say that the Split Pants beer made by Long Bay is gluten reduced. So if you are someone that, obviously not going to work for celiacs, but if you do find all the gluten in beer sometimes a bit much or a bit filling, Split Pants. It's a pilsner. It's 4.5%. It's absolutely delicious. It's my favorite beer in the world right now, Long Bay. And go and say hi to lovely Lindsay at Long Bay. And shout out to Tim and John, who were there last night, working their backsides off to create great beer. And the terrace is open. You can take dogs out there. So Willow loved it. Lindsay's asked, what color is the school bus, yellow or orange? Her vote is orange. I think it's yellow. Not that I would ever disagree with Lindsay on anything. Love school buses. It's always a reminder that, hey, I live in North America. It's like, oh my God. It's just when I see my son get on the school bus, it's still a novelty because as a kid, it was the most kind of Hollywood American thing, school buses. Jay Howitzer asked, is Passing Winds a good name for a retirement home? Yes, it is. It's Passing Winds. Tim Andrews has asked, will I gig the UK again? Yes, I hope to, Tim. I massively screwed up my last public gig in the UK, something I've written about in detail for my next book. I massively screwed up. Let's just say it's the reason that I don't drink before shows anymore. All was forgiven in the end. I made things right, but I've made a big error of judgment. I screwed up, and you make mistakes, and I beat myself up about it all the time, and it forms a huge chapter of my next book. But I will gig the UK again. I've done lots of shows there since then for New Brunswick Tourism, Destination Canada, or Canadian. But yes, I definitely do plan to do gigs again. Nat Hat, dear darling Nat Hat, biggest pet peeve. Good question. What annoys me? What gets my goat? When completely honest, I guess what gets my goat is people who preach support local but don't support local is the thing I probably complain about most as someone that runs a business that supports local, and people talk about supporting local and then they advertise in publications outside the region or Toronto companies or that's probably the thing I probably as a business owner we complain about most. Other pet peeves day to day out in the street, people speeding down Mossey Road. Yeah, there's kids waiting for the bus, people going like a gazillion miles an hour down. The constant smell of weed billowing out of these cars. I'd say one in four cars when you walk down the road. It was legalized, rightly so. I thought, why is everyone smoking it on the way to work? That's not a big pet peeve. I'm just bringing it up. Another thing, I should answer that one better, but those are some pet peeves. A lovely Bev has asked, how do your parents feel about you and your brother both being Canadian now, and will they ever leave the UK to be closer to you? They won't leave the UK. My mum actually can't travel. She can't fly. She's very, very scared of it. Doesn't do well for her. She has visited New Brunswick once after we got married in 2006. Neither of my parents have actually been to New Brunswick in the 10 years we've lived here. But my dad is coming next month and will get to see me live actually twice in 1 week. First at the Thirsty Whippet Pub at Ladysmith Manor. So that's a big deal. My dad's first visit here since, 2006, when we got married in Toronto, they came here for a visit. So I've never been in New Brunswick with my parents ever. How do they feel about that? They're obviously sad that they're not near their sons and grandchildren, but they're very happy about the lives that we have found here. And my mum said when we told her the news that we were leaving, we obviously burst into tears, but said that the tears were half tears of joy, knowing that we would have a far better life here than we would in the UK. And that's everything. We would all like to be closer, but we are emotionally close. And we don't speak all the time. We swap messages now and again. I know that I have friends locally who speak to their parents every single day. We're not like that, but we're close in that we all love each other. Me and my brother, for example, I could think of us as very close, but we only see each other once a year when I go out to BC to do shows, which incidentally, my BC tour dates are on sale. BC tour dates are on sale. I am playing Salmon Arm, Penticton, Vernon and Kelowna, November 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Tickets on sale now, trainwreckcomedy.com. Please tell your friends in BC and the Okanagan Valley to come and see me. How do my parents feel? My parents are very, very happy that my brother and I are so happy here. There's a story in my book about how I feel like I was meant to be Canadian. And I think my parents will probably agree with that. Matt Keenan, one of my favorite comedians. Matt Keenan, if you haven't seen Matt Keenan's work, please go and see him live. He is just a phenomenal performer, joke writer, all around a wonderful human being. Great father, great husband, great friend. One of the just staples in New Brunswick comedy scene. He has asked, did I catch the roast of Tom Brady? I did. I've answered that. Absolutely loved it. Did I miss anything else about the roast that I wanted to say? Kim Kardashian, I didn't think it was very nice of people to boo her. It is a roast. She's going to get roasted anyway, so to speak. I don't think she should have been booed. Not nice. That's my kind of pet peeve. Nah, it's just people being mean. I really don't. I don't get people being mean. I get it on social. Obviously, I'm annoyingly prevalent on social. I'm always posting stuff. But I guess you can silence people if you don't want to see it. But there's this. I posted something yesterday. I posted a picture from Kent of a toilet called the Saint John toilet, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. And this guy goes on and posts something like, yeah, it's shit, like your comedy. How do you have the energy, mate? Like, I genuinely just feel so sad for that person that they sat there going, I hate James Bond, he's not funny. So rather than just silence him, I'm going to go on his page. I'm going to post this. Yeah, shit like you, Mullinger. Like, how do you have the energy? Like, especially because it's not like I could have done anything to upset him in real life. He just doesn't like what I do, which is absolutely fine. Like I say, there's lots of things that I don't like, so I just don't consume them. I don't like Sprouts. But I don't go on the Sprout Facebook page going, you taste like piss, which is how they taste to me. But don't put me going on the Sprout Facebook page and upsetting Sprout's feelings. Pathetic. We've got a bit busy doing other things. Matt, you were right. Nikki Glaser did absolutely kill it. And I met her once. Amy Schumer introduced us at the Comedy Village Underground. What's it called? Comedy Cellar in New York. And I think she was the best of the night. I was thinking about something the other day, right? Just about how Jonathan Torrens brings so much positivity to social media. I think if you follow Jonathan Torrens, a great man, obviously much loved Canadian icon. And he's someone I just thought that in life I need to be more Torrens, right? Just kind of care less on what other people are doing, focus positively on what you're doing. And just kind of, everyone's insecure. Seemingly no one's happy. So why don't we be radical and be happy? That was just the thought I had the other day. I saw a comedian, Rory Scovel, on Mike Birbiglia's podcast last week saying a thing about how he's always beating himself up about, not being funny and, feeling like a fraud, which we all feel like. And he said he did this thing where he went on stage and improvised like five shows, all improvised an hour, killed. And he's like, that got me over thinking. So I'm going to try that. I'm going to book a venue and try and do five. And then maybe it won't go well. And then I'll have to admit that I'm not funny. And I am a fraud. And that guy that's slagging me off on my page was actually right all along. I'm terrible. And I should be removed from comedy forever. I've been asked again, I think it was Shane has asked, did I know that comic from Baby Reindeer? I didn't know him. He started to perform regularly at around 2014 when I left, but I did play all the same gigs as him before I left. Okay, a few more things before we go. Okay, as I mentioned before, I get tons of notes about the dating pool. I met up with a friend at the weekend who is a lovely single lady and in her 30s. And oh my goodness, hearing what it's like out there is brutal. I've heard it now from girls in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Men sort it out. I cannot believe everyone thinks there's this completely ridiculous misnomer that Me Too has stopped awfulness. It hasn't. The awfulness seems to be more prevalent than ever. It seems to be more under the carpet than ever. It's being brushed under the carpet. So I've joked about this before, but it's time to do it. If anyone knows of a great single man who is looking for a serious relationship, who is a nice gentleman, who doesn't send pictures of his unsolicited pictures of parts of his body to people, if anyone knows one, please send him my way and I will start the Mullinger's matchmaking service, because I'm absolutely horrified to hear about the awful dating scene. And to be honest, it's the same for everyone. And this is not even a male a heterosexual thing. It seems to be everything. A friend of mine has indeed shown me the situation on Grindr, and it is not a pretty sight. More faces, more heart, and please less penises. That's my message. Less penises. That don't make that the title of this episode, please, Rhys. So we've got through page. I mentioned, yes, I watched, I was listening to, a lovely, a question here from Evelyn McNulty, lovely Evelyn McNulty, mother of Lily. I'm looking at the beautiful painting Lily McNulty painted me of me as a cat holding a microphone. I don't know if Lily does sell her paintings, but if she doesn't, she should. They are magnificent and inspiring. And I don't have much up around my wall. I have a picture of St. Paul's Church in Marseille, beautiful, much I love. I have a painting by River. I have, and the main thing I have above me is Lily McNulty's painting. She has asked, how did me and Ethan Ash meet? Excellent question. Weirdly, Ethan and I actually met here. So I knew Ethan's music, obviously, in the UK. He knew of my comedy, and he was here, and he stays with a lovely lady called Marianne in Quispamsis, and he was here doing shows at the Bell's Head, and she said, you should reach out to this comedian here. He's also English. And he reached out and we met up, I believe, at Mark Bennett's house for the first time. Quite a wild night that was, actually. And Ethan and I became friends and started doing shows together at Dunham's Run and then Kingsbury Amphitheatre. And I've got closer and closer and are obviously now like extremely close friends. I mean, really understand each other. I mean, for example, I'll tell you how close we were. When I did my ADHD testing at the KV Psychiatry, highly recommended clinic, that when I turned up for the testing, you know, there was an element of, you know, a bit like James Bond, Mr. Mullinger, we've been expecting you. the amazing gentleman who did my testing, Mark Vickers, he asked, they like to speak to someone who knows you very well, which is normally a partner. So but actually, I put him in touch with Ethan just because Ethan sees me in far more different mental situations, mentally strenuous and difficult situations, i.e. before shows, after shows, highs and lows, pre-show panic, post-show highs, all that stuff. So anyway, that's how close we are. So that's how we met. He reached out. We started doing gigs. And that's it. Now, my final thing I'm going to talk about is, some shows coming up. I've got a couple of weeks off as I rehearse for the sitcom that we're filming next month. But I do have shows in this month. Moncton Head Start fundraiser, vital fundraiser for Moncton Head Start at the Moncton Coliseum. It is on Friday, the 24th of May. Google my name and Moncton Head Start. And then Friday 24th of May, and then on the 25th of May, I'm in Miramichi at the James M. Hill Memorial Theatre. Miramichi, I've not done a show there for 2 years, so all new material and tons of material about what it was like filming the sitcom Bit Out of Water in your beautiful city, Miramichi, and lots of revealing stories about your wonderful mayor, Mr. Adam Lorden, that had never been told before. So Miramichi, hope to see you there. I was listening to Bill Burr's podcast this morning. He played the Hollywood Bowl at the weekend, and he was describing that feeling of like going out on stage and the nerves in this huge, you know, 20,000 seater his outdoor amphitheater. And he talks about how he took too much caffeine before he went out and almost fainted in the first 10 minutes. And he was really freaking out, like, oh my God. And one interesting thing he talks about was this feeling of like when you kind of go, he was like, right, this is big. I'm going to murder this girl. I'm going to murder that feeling of just going, I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to murder. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, some of my favorite gigs have stemmed from, one of my favorite ever gigs, I would say, was the Kingsbury Amphitheatre 2 years ago. So not 2023, when it was the St. Andrews Comedy Festival, the year before, 2022. My kids were in the audience. I was insanely stressed. It was my in-laws' anniversary, so they were there. So we had all this going on. And I arrived at the amphitheatre, obviously done sound check and all the prep in the afternoon, but then I arrived in my suit like a couple of minutes before showtime. I'd also ridiculously made it so I was emceeing and headlining. So I had all my MC stuff to remember, plus a 70-minute headline set, plus it was full of new material that I'd never done before. And I arrived thinking, this can't go well. And somehow, I can't compare myself to anyone else. So, I mean, I'm not a good comedian by anyone else's standards, but for myself, and that's the only thing you can compare yourself to, never compare yourself to other people, only compare yourself to yourself. For within my limited skill set, I was the best I can be, is I would say. And I don't know how, and interestingly, certain routines like the Woody Point routine, which I did 100 times since, I would say I probably did it the best that night. So there's certain cases. Anyway, sometimes you say to yourself, right, I'm going to go out and enjoy this. And sometimes it's stressful. Before, I was actually very stressed before the Imperial Theatre this gig this year. I also do a thing where sometimes, you know, I always like to make sure I'm brush my teeth and I've taken mouthwash. And I had some mouthwash before I went on stage and actually there was nowhere to spit it. So I swallowed it and it actually made me feel a bit lightheaded. So when I walked out at the Imperial, I was a bit lightheaded, but nothing actually was as bad as last year. I was playing the Capitol Theatre and I don't know what, I started coming down with something on the day of the show. I was gone the next day. Maybe it was nerves. My wife often says it, but I was so dizzy that I was out on stage and the gig was going ridiculously well, but I was genuinely worried I might faint any minute. I felt so lightheaded and I don't know why. And it was, and I just felt awful. But the gig was killing, and I luckily knew the material well enough by then. I didn't know, but I honestly was out there thinking I could drop at any point. So hearing Bill Burr describe exactly that was very interesting. I can't wait to... Janice, I've just seen popped up on Facebook on my screen. Janice McAdam, who asked the question about Tyler, asked... she's just replied saying, Tyler's certainly a talent and a rock star. Coming from a broadcasting background and producing for radio, I can see his eye for forward thinking. You make a great team. I only just discovered you a short while ago. I saw you in Florenceville. I love how you're still... I can't read this out because it's complimentary and it would be counterproductive. I can't read out someone telling me how humble I am because that wouldn't be humble. So that would be a oxymoron and I would be a hypocrite. But she did say that. Thank you, Janice. Don't ever lose that. My dad was from Britain and I see so many similar isms. It makes me smile. Sorry for the chat's verse. Don't apologize. It's beautiful, Janice. I appreciate it. Keep on and stay away from the peanut butter. And if you know that stand-up routine, you know it. And if you don't watch this at work because it's not safe for work, but YouTube search my name and closing routine. And by the way, it was Sherry McCarthy that asked that question about baby reindeer. That's it for the podcast this week. Sorry, this is the longest ever episode. There was lots to cover, lots of questions. I hope I have covered everything that you have all kindly asked. Thank you for listening. Final shout out to Derek. After the show on Saturday night, Derek, who was the heroic, brilliant, gorgeous, lovely, kind, loving bus driver from my best weekend of my life when my father-in-law and my son went to Montreal on the Dream Vacations bus tour. Derek was our beloved driver, amazing driver, just an absolute gent through and through. He turns up at the show Saturday night, sits at the front, laughs his backside off with his beautiful girlfriend, even as I'm roasting them. And after the show presents me with a vintage Maple Leafs jersey for Hunter, which has just made Hunter's day. Hunter is got back Sunday night, gave it to him, never seen him so happy. He's currently at Drama Fest in Fredericton. Hope he's having a good time. I am off to see The Fall Guy at the cinema. And then hopefully, if there's time, going to check out the new Hopscotch that has opened where the Canterbury used to be. There you go. There's another example. Where's Hopscotch? It's where the Canterbury used to be in Uptown St. John. So I'll let you know how it is next week. Thanks for listening to Mullinger's Weekly Ramble. I've been Des Mullinger. You've been absolutely lovely. Thank you so much for listening. Please do keep sending questions. I'll see you next week. Have an amazing rest of week and just be more Torrens. And like I say, just remember, anything you're going through right now, you have already successfully navigated way worse in your life. This is going to be a breeze. You're amazing. I love you. The world loves you. See you next week.
Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.